days, and well, keep talking. You're got a pretty good volume.
All right, very good. Then let's get into it. So I hope a little bit later in the program we some about the Ethiopian and actually greater Horn of Africa community here in Colorado. But the events that have transpired in Ethiopia these last few weeks are really historic. In fact, it's hard to compare these things, but from my perspective, of course, the main show globally right now in terms of conflict is what's happening in Ukraine. But what's going on in Ethiopia wasn't far behind it. And to have a peace agreement come together the way this one has is really extraordinary. And what's even more extraordinary is the lack of media attention that that this agreement has gotten, particularly here in the West and here in the United States. But before analyzing this agreement, Nebihu, and explore what's going on here in Colorado, can you give us first, briefly tell us, why should anybody in Colorado care about what's happening in Ethiopia?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. You know, we often here in the U.S. and the West underestimate the value of Africa in terms of enabling our modern lifestyle and how much things that happen in Africa impact us. You know, Africa is a large continent of 1.3 billion people, out of which 40% are under 15. That's expected to double to 2.4 billion by year 2050. Africa, in a sense, represents the future, a generational shift. And economically speaking, it is now the fastest growing region in the world. So that's the future of China in a way. And the U.S. engagement in Africa has been a little underwhelming. And as American citizens, it is in our best interest to really know what our government is doing in Africa, how we're engaging with this emerging region, and to ensure that we have a positive, good relationship with Africa. For example, you know, a lot of Americans are oblivious to what the United States is doing in Africa. For example, many people don't know that we have 29 military bases in Africa. But, you know, our engagement with Africa has been more military, and we haven't always supported the right side. And at times we've been behind regime changes and wars. You know, the Libya situation is one example, and now Ethiopia. So as informed Americans and as Coloradans, not just because this affects our neighbors, the large Ethiopian population here in Colorado, but because it affects us all, it's a human issue. So it's really in our best interest to know what is happening across the world, especially fully knowing that our government is fully involved in the situation in Ethiopia.
All right, that's a really good explanation for why we should be concerned, both about Ethiopia in particular and Africa in general. So, Nebihu, what do you make of this strange media silence about this historic agreement? And more importantly, what are the main themes of this agreement? On paper, it gives the impression that, quite frankly, the Tigray People's Liberation Front has accepted complete defeat in this. Is this accurate?
Yeah, it can be interpreted that way. You know, the media silence, you know, I would say the mainstream media here rarely gets Africa right. It usually just superficially determines who's the villain and who's victim, and then they would just narrow that narrative, push that narrative until the end of the earth. What is happening now with the peace deal really does not fit the narrative that the mass media was building. So, you know, this is a huge breakthrough. This is a deadly conflict that lasted for 2 years, that took the lives of 600,000 people, caused millions to be displaced, and caused over $25 billion in infrastructure damage. There was a lot of coverage during the war, but now peace is here, it's silence, you know, and unfortunately, this goes with the theme of the selective reporting of Western media, where we only hear the disasters and the bad situations, but when things turn better or good, we just go silent. So I appreciate you guys covering this. This is a major breakthrough, ending at least an agreement, a permanent cessation of hostilities. They're calling it the silencing of the guns. It involves, in a sense, the surrender of the TPLF, the Tigray People Liberation Front. They've agreed to disarm, completely disarm, and hand over territories that they were holding in the Tigray province to Ethiopian federal authorities. And in return, the TPLF combatants would receive amnesty. The TPLF, after going through a process, will become a non-armed political party.
And Nebigu, just real quick, as far as you know, there was concern that the TPLF would not turn over their armament or their guns and so forth. And as far as you know, that has been happening.
So that's definitely been a concern. We have had instances in the past where, ceasefire was agreed, and the TPLF three times broke the ceasefires and used that time to rearm themselves. So there's definitely concern because the historic pattern of the TPLF has not always been truthful or sticking to agreements.
Right.
So there's definitely that chance. Now, this agreement has specific milestones on it. One is within the disarmament would be done in phases, and the first phase is supposed to start tomorrow, actually, on November 23rd. So far, the agreement was signed on November 2nd in South Africa, and then a follow-up conference was held between the two military leaders in Nairobi, Kenya, last week. We'll see if the process starts tomorrow in good faith. There's been mixed signals coming out of the TPLF, over the past 2-3 weeks. Are they still committed to the peace deal? Are they not? But they did make a press release today saying that they're still committed to it. So we're going to have to see, if they actually do go through with it. We're hopeful.
And just one other thing, we have Tigray as also was involved in this conflict, and not having them involved, they weren't part of the peace process, but as far as you know, they've pulled back from their support of the TPLF.
Do you mean Eritrea or?
I'm sorry. Yes, Eritrea. Sorry about that. Yeah, I got that wrong. Sorry. Yep.
That's okay. Eritrea is the northern neighbor of Ethiopia. It's a country right up north that borders the Tigray province of Ethiopia. And that's right. They were impacted by this war because the TPLF has been hostile towards Eritrea, launching missiles into Eritrea. And Eritrea had also sent troops into Ethiopia, supporting the Ethiopian government, basically joining the allied forces to defend against the TPLF. Eritrea was not part of the negotiation, and there hasn't really been any official announcements off of this, but the Eritrea government has been completely supportive of the Ethiopian people, and that I think that they would be a productive members of this process and to ensuring peace. Now, from the TPLF side, that has been one thing they've been threatening. They're saying their Eritrean troops have to leave before we disarm, but that's not part of the agreement. Not necessarily Eritrea was not called out on the agreement. We'll see, but definitely Eritrea is being used as a scapegoat by the TPLF and some other people around the world that really support the TPLF. But I don't see Eritrea as an issue. Eritrea has been a partner in this for peace, and they've demonstrated through their actions.
Nebigu, how have the people in Ethiopia and the Ethiopian community here in Colorado responded to this peace agreement?
You know, it was a surprise. It came in as a surprise when it was signed, and the biggest surprise was the TPLF agreeing to disarm. While people were cautiously optimistic, they were nervous, and they were saying, I got to see it to believe it, because it's really hard for people that know the TPLF, which has been around for 40 years in Ethiopia and is known to be a brutal regime, for them to voluntarily disarm is really unbelievable. So that's kind of how the feeling has been in the community and in Ethiopia as well. But, you know, like trust, verify. So I think that people would feel a lot more comfortable when they actually see the disarmament happening, which is supposed to start tomorrow and later this week. But overall, people are happy. The war has stopped. This has been a devastating war. Now that the war has stopped and the TPLF is kind of out of the way, humanitarian aid has been able to flow to impacted regions in Tigray province and Amhara province, Afar. So people are getting food, people are getting medicine. And just seeing the pictures and videos of that is just really making people feel good about this and hopeful that this peace agreement will stick.
Yeah. Let's see. There were a couple of other questions. Can you just briefly, you know, we're talking about the Tigray People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, Ethiopia. My hunch is that a good portion of the listeners could already be lost in all this. What was the problem? What was the issue that triggered this military conflict? And can you just give us briefly a little background on the TPLF and what it's been up to and why all this has kind of come to a head in this way?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely, I will. So first, you know, Ethiopia is located in a very strategic place that has been pretty hot for alleged terrorist activities. Next door was Somalia, where Al-Shabaab was roaming around. And then there's Sudan, where Bin Laden actually lived there once. The U.S. has actually bombed both countries around Ethiopia. So the TPLF was the ruler of Ethiopia from 1991 all the way to 2018. So the TPLF became a longtime friend to the United States since basically the days of the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia. The TPLF became friends with the U.S., pledging to fight terrorism on behalf of the U.S. And because of that, they sent troops to Somalia and basically became the America's policeman in the area. But what happened was they received a lot of money from the U.S., over $1 billion a year, where the TPLF was getting from America. They were getting military training, resources, all kinds of weapons, under the name of counterterrorism. All right. So this is America's gift to the TPLF to fight terrorism. But instead, what the TPLF did was turned it against the Ethiopian people. And implemented this tribal, outdated ethnic federalism, where they were dividing people, and they just became extremely brutal, all right? Very brutal, torturing people and just abusing people, alleged genocides, atrocities happening everywhere in Ethiopia under the TPLF, while the United States looked the other way because they were allies in the fight against terrorism. In 2018, the Ethiopian people said, we've had enough. 27 years of this is enough. We're done. And basically, an uprising, a revolution happened where the TPLF was removed from power by popular protest. When the TPLF was removed from power, they retreated to the Tigray region. That's their native region. This is an ethnic party. This is a party made out of one ethnicity, Tigrayans. So they moved to Tigray, from where, with the help of the United States, launched an armed insurrection for regime change to overthrow the current Ethiopian government that came to power by a vote. So that's what the last 2 years was, the TPLF armed insurgency to get back into power by force, and the Ethiopian government fighting against that. And now it appears that the war, in a sense, has been won by the Ethiopian government, and the TPLF is in the process, or should be in the process, of disarming.
Okay. I have a quote from Kissinger, which I think is kind of apt. It's dangerous to be an enemy of the United States, but to be a friend is fatal. Why do I mention that? Because Ethiopia, a long time, was a friend. Ethiopia, from friend to foe in one step, it seems. Can you explain this transition in U.S.-Ethiopian relations, the souring of these relations? It stuff happens so quickly. First, Abe is given the Nobel Peace Prize. He's cheered in the American media. And from November 3rd, 2020, until today, he's been turned into, you know, the devil incarnate, and the Ethiopian government has been accused, without any documentation, at least I've ever seen, of all kinds of crimes. That's quite a shift. What's going on here, Nebeu?
Yeah, it just really happened overnight. And for many of us, Ethiopian Americans that follow Ethiopia really closely, it was a complete shock on how overnight the United States turned its back on Ethiopia. I should say the Biden administration turned its back on Ethiopia. I know this administration has not had a good track record in foreign policy, but Ethiopia was one of their failures. Ethiopia is an ally of the United States, have been a friend for over 100 years. Ethiopian people and American people are friends, you know, but instead of encouraging democracy, the building of free institutions in Ethiopia, unfortunately, the current administration chose to support a military regime that, for some reason, that they thought would represented the better interest of the United States. But they had it wrong. And in the process, really the relationship between the two countries soured. I'm telling you, like, I'm from Ethiopia, and we love the United States. Everybody in Ethiopia loved America. My, you know, when I saw the last time around when the Biden administration put the sanctions on Ethiopia, and over a million people in Ethiopia came out protesting the United States, it broke my heart. It broke my heart because the people in Ethiopia felt like they were betrayed. They were backstabbed by the United States, who they considered a friend. This sanctioning a poor country that's already suffering from poverty and war is just inhumane. In the middle of a COVID pandemic is when they were doing that. And just the sheer hostility the United States was showing to Ethiopia in favor of this rebel group has just really been heartbreaking for a lot of Ethiopians. And that's really what happened. And I'm really hopeful that you know, we will start repairing that soured relationship.
Neber, do you think some of it has to do with, you mentioned the TPLF and its relationship going back to Black Hawk Down, some of those members. And do you think there's some relationship with that, you know, in fighting in the region over the years, that the U.S. felt it had to back, it turns out, what seems to be the wrong side, but that they felt that way, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, obviously some of it I'm speculating here, but definitely deep relationships with TPLF leaders who were basically ruling Ethiopia. They have really deep relationships with U.S. diplomats, especially in the Democratic Party. And a lot of the diplomats that are running the Biden administration now know the TPLF leaders on a first-name basis. And this relationship goes back decades.
Can you name some of the names here?
That.
I I have them in my head, but I'm always forgetting who they are. But they're really deep in that administration, aren't they? I mean, it includes the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, but several others play a key role, and they do. Nephew, you're absolutely right. They tend to be Democrats. Having said that,
well, that goes back to the Clinton administration, right? And a lot of these people have been around that long.
Yeah, they've been around for a very, very long time.
Clinton, Somalia.
Yeah, yes, correct, yeah.
And then got even tighter during Obama when we invaded Libya. Mm. And the TPLF was an ally. The U.S. had like a drone base in Ethiopia, a military base in Ethiopia, and that was being used in Somalia, even across the sea in Yemen. So, you know, the TPLF was really a military strategic ally. Some call it a proxy state. That's the role the TPLF was playing. But you know, the Biden administration realized that they were overthrown by the Ethiopian people, and you shouldn't bet against 120 million people.
For sure. And I just want to say that on our program, when the Biden administration came in, we looked at the foreign policy aspect of it with Middle East policy, and Anthony Blinken was somebody we mentioned who seemed to be more of a war hawk than your standard, well, you know, what are considered Democrat sort of on the peace side. But he definitely raised our interest, piqued our interest in him. He has a long history of being very warlike.
Right. So he comes out of
him, Anthony Blinken, as well as Samantha Powers, is also a war hawk.
Yeah.
there's a number of people in that administration that were behind the Syria situation, the Libya situation, even some in Afghanistan and Yemen. And those are the folks using the same playbook in Ethiopia.
Right. Oh, I just want to jump in here, gentlemen, just to give, we're coming up we're at 6:30, and this is KGNU 88.5 FM and 1390 AM, and you're listening to Hemispheres. And this is the Middle East Dialogues, and we've returned this evening to the Horn of Africa series, and we have on the line Nebihu Asfa speaking about the recent peace agreement in Ethiopia. And I'm your host for this evening's Hemispheres, Jim Nelson, and I'm joined, as always, in those dialogues with Rob Prince as well. And so go ahead, Rob. You might have another question or two here.
When this agreement was agreed upon in South Africa, Nebihu, the State Department issued a statement several days later. It was so cool as to be almost cold and did not celebrate Ethiopia. Is that, am I reading something into that statement, or is that an accurate assessment? And if it is, what's going on here from what you can tell?
Yeah, so the State Department under Anthony Blinken is definitely not in good terms with Ethiopia or the Ethiopian people. They have not won the hearts and minds of Ethiopians. So the U.S. has been trying to mediate or facilitate a peace talk in Ethiopia, but they were pushed out, pushed back, and Ethiopia insisted that this is an African problem and it needed an African solution. So the condition for the peace talk was that it would be facilitated by the African Union and Western powers would keep out of it. So I don't think that was welcomed by the State Department. However, the State Department forced its way into the peace talks as, quote, observers, all right, as observers, but they didn't have an active role. However, the TPLF leaders, for example, were flown to the negotiation in a U.S. military plane. you know, which kind of, you know, a lot of Ethiopians are kind of scratching their head. Why is an American military plane flying these rebels? And in it was a U.S. ambassador, Mike Hummer, with them. So, you know, the U.S. was part of this peace talk, even though it was labeled an African solution for African problem. And the whining and dining with the TPLF leaders, flying them and making this kind of, you know, interesting statements has kind of created that feeling that, that the U.S. has taken a side or confirmed those suspicion by the public, which is not really completely helpful. But in a way, there's also some that say that the U.S. had persuaded the TPLF to disarm, and that if it wasn't for the U.S., they would not have disarmed. But at the same time,
evidence of that,
seeing a military defeat.
Any idea what the TPLF pressure, the American pressure on TPLF was in these negotiations at all? Is that just a room, you know, just kind of people trying to, you know, finesse it or something? Give a spin to it.
Well, the environment when they were going into this peace talk is that the TPLF had lost a majority of the territories they once held, and they were surrounded in Mekelle, which is the capital of Tigray. And the Ethiopian forces were within striking distance to take out the TPLF completely. So I would imagine the U.S. coming in saying that TPLF, if you want to save yourself as a political party, you know, let us help you make a deal. You disarm, but you're spared with amnesty, and you continue to be a political player. I think that was the deal they gave them, that the TPLF took, and that's exactly what happened in the peace talk. You know, I'll tell you, most of Ethiopian people just really wanted the end of the TPLF. Just don't even want to hear about it anymore. 30 years is long enough for these people. They're done. But now they're going to continue as a civilian party. And I would imagine that's the deal that the U.S. gave them, is that I will, you know, we'll guide you, we'll protect you. You know, you make this deal and, you know, you live as a political entity and submit to the Ethiopian government with, you know, militarily at least. And simultaneously, while this has happened in the past 2 weeks, there's also been, you know, renewed threats of sanction on Ethiopia, which is really, really bizarre, including by State Department officials.
We'll come back to that in a second. That's actually kind of big on my agenda for this program, the sanctions. But I want to just continue just a little bit more with this whole discussion about the U.S. and the TPLF, because I'm looking at it, needless to say, not in Ethiopian, here in Colorado. And here's how it looks to me. Number one, that this very war was encouraged by Washington, okay?
Right.
At least several videos of U.S. administration people literally egging on the TPLF, you know, to go to war. And then it's protected in this whole media campaign that was so one-sided against the Ethiopian government. And now that the United States can, now that it's getting serious, i.e., in order to defend the TPLF, Washington would have had to up the ante militarily, send troops or I don't know what, and they weren't willing to do it. So
yeah,
what it looks like to me is we use you as a proxy. We don't need you anymore. Bye-bye. And I see Washington, that's pretty much what they did with the government in Afghanistan. It looks to me they're about to cut loose the Kurds, more or less the same thing. Yes, we were friends, but we don't need you anymore. And my hunch, we don't need to go into this, but I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing happens to the Zelensky government in the Ukraine. So are we looking at a case where Washington basically used this group for its own strategic ends, and now that it can't do it anymore, you know, like Kissinger says, we don't need you, it's fatal. Is that a cynical view of what's happening here? Just old cynical Rob Prince looking at U.S. foreign policy saying, here it goes again. or am I missing something?
No, I think that's very, very likely. And I think that, the U.S. foreign policy has a pattern, especially this administration has a certain pattern. And if that pattern is going to repeat itself, that scenario you described is very, very likely. The TPLF is definitely a spent force. The U.S. knows that it's, you know, of no use anymore. So, you know, it may be definitely a process of abandoning that. You know, however, it is a very important strategic region in terms of trade. That part of the area is where at least the canal that, and also remember, China's spending $1 trillion in the area and development. So there is the new Cold War with China as well. So the U.S. is not going to disengage from the Horn of Africa at all. But definitely, I think that there will be a strategic shift, leaving the TPLF behind.
And on that point, Nebuhu, in terms of the geopolitical elements that were involved in this struggle, because it wasn't just Ethiopian, it had a whole international part of it. It seems as if that Ethiopia was caught between Russia and China on the one hand, and the United States on the other. And then to a certain degree, it's a victim of this new Cold War that we're beginning to see. And that from what I can tell, Ethiopia's approach to this is it wants good relations with both the United States and the Europeans on the one hand and China and Russia on the other. And that this is a high crime in Washington. Again, I'm asking, accurate or an exaggeration?
You hit it on the nail. That's exactly what's happening. Ethiopia has chosen to take a neutral path, saying that, you know, the shenanigans between NATO and Russia, the U.S., EU, is none of our business. That's Ethiopia's stand. We're going to be friends with all of you, and we're going to, you know, act on the best interest of our people. And that's definitely not going well with Washington, because it's either you're with us or against us. That's kind of how it's seen. But Ethiopia is an emerging country. It's one of the top fastest growing economies in the world. Many people don't know that. It's also a country of 120 million, which makes it the 12th largest nation in the world. And it wants to uplift its people out of poverty. And that's what's happening. And to do that, it cannot make enemies with China, you know. And what really bothers me, to be honest with you, is America is China's biggest trade partner. How much money do we owe China? How much trade we do with China? So it's okay for us to deal with China, but it's not okay for Africa to deal with China. You know, it's just a little bit of a double standard where even us are dependent on China. So that's what's happening. That's the Cold War and the reality of it. But, you know, Ethiopia is increasingly asserting sovereignty over its economy. It's not necessarily following the rules, the golden rules outlined by the West. You know, even when it comes to energy, Ethiopia is working on energy sovereignty by building this $6 billion dam, you know, green energy against the opposal of the West and Egypt. So there's a lot going on where Ethiopia and Eritrea and that whole area is working on creating a regional economic integration and sovereignty that wants to have a good relationship with both the East and the West.
Nebuhu, that was something that I wanted to bring up was also, you just brought it up, was the Renaissance Dam, the huge dam you mentioned, $6 billion. But one of the positive effects was the green energy, in a sense, that it would produce for the region. But Egypt has objected, as you mentioned, because it is a big dam, and it would take a lot of the water out of the Nile. And maybe you could explain a little bit about this dam and where it is.
In 2024, but it's a dam. It doesn't stop the water. The water flows through a turbine and it keeps going to Egypt.
So, oh, okay.
But not going to impact it. What is going to impact is when filling the actual dam, the reservoir, is you got to do it slowly and over a period of years so you don't affect the water supply to Egypt. And that's why it's taken 6 years to fill it, and it's going to take another 2 years to complete it because they're deliberately filling it slowly not to impact the water flow in Sudan. But the impact of this dam is enormous. This is going to be the seventh largest hydroelectric power dam in the world. It's going to generate enough electricity for 200 million people. So it's going to power up five countries in the Horn of Africa. It's not just for Ethiopia. And this is going to enable industrialization. There's already a multitude of Western companies that are lining up to open their manufacturing in Ethiopia just so they can get the carbon credit. You know how they get the credit when they produce, because this is 100% green energy. It's going to have a significant impact. The population of the Horn of Africa region and the size of it is equal to the entire Western Europe together. So this is a significant portion of the world that's going to be off of oil, you know, on completely 100% renewable energy. Simultaneously, Ethiopia is doing this legacy effort where they're already planted 24 billion trees and want to, you know, plant another 24 billion in the next 2-3 years. So it's a whole effort that could be a model for a future of humanity. But there's industries and interest groups that don't like to see a whole new economy, a whole new civilization being built on pure green energy. That's independent of oil, that's independent of all this other world issues. That's what's happening there. And some argue the reason for part of the conflict that's happening there.
Yeah, you know, it's good that Jim, you raised this question of the dam, because what amazes me is in the midst of this war, and I know it's hurt Ethiopia economically some, but you spoke about this dynamism. It's continued in spite of the war, if I'm not mistaken. Is that accurate?
That's right. The construction continued in spite of the war. And also, Jim, Ethiopia was sanctioned and banned from getting finance for this dam.
Wow.
IMF, everybody sanctioned Ethiopia because they just didn't want this to happen. This is financed by the people. Civil servants were given out their salaries. Shoe shiners in the cities of Addis were, donating money. This is financed by the people. So, you know, this is a model where millions of people get together and say, we're not going to rely on anybody else. We're going to become sovereign economically, and we don't need your permission. We don't need your money. We can develop our own. It's really, truly a success story happening in East Africa right now with this dam.
No, the last time you were on a year ago, many of the things you were talking about just now, you mentioned at the time, and it seems like such a great project. And like you're mentioning, it's such a green energy idea and or plan, and the fact that the U.S. Well, the U.S. is very dependent on oil, even as much as we try to claim that we're not. And so there's probably some of that, and along with Egypt having objections to this dam. I think under Trump, didn't Trump say if Egypt wanted to bomb the dam that they could? So it's got a negative aspect here to on the U.S. side, and but like you're saying, Ethiopia is showing its own independence, and sometimes that's not a good thing in the eyes of the U.S.
Yeah, I wanted
that's 100% right. You know, some say that water is the new oil.
Yes, that's for sure.
It used to be that anytime there is a war, there's some oil behind it. This time, it's water.
Yeah, for sure.
River.
Yeah.
From oil to water, the wars present and the future.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to these sanctions just briefly with you in the time remaining, Nevi. Because what I've seen is there are sanctions against Ethiopia, both in the House and in the Senate right now, and that these sanctions have been revised and hardened. And this is Washington's response to the peace agreement, is to harden the sanctions. Now, I know that they haven't gone through, but they're being pushed at this very moment. So I find it disturbing that this is the way the United States greets this peace agreement, by tightening sanctions against Ethiopia. Can you talk a little bit about what these sanctions are and what's going on here?
Yeah, so there are some sanctions that are already in place. For example, there's trade restrictions that have been put on Ethiopia. Ethiopia was from what's called the AGOA, the African Growth Opportunity Act. Economic assistance has been scaled back. There's an arms embargo. There's other series of sanctions that already been in place against Ethiopia and Eritrean people. This two legislations, H.R. 6600 in the House and then S.R. 9300 in the Senate, are just really draconian economic warfare. It's just sanctions that would just put a chokehold on the Ethiopian economy. And again, this legislations have been floating around Congress for a few months, and they were kind of killed. They couldn't get enough support to go forward because, you know, a lot of the Ethiopian Americans were fighting it and resisting it, calling Congress their representatives. But there seems to be a renewed effort now on this. I don't know if this is a way of flexing muscles to Ethiopia. I don't know if they're bluffing with it or if they're really trying to add more sanction on Ethiopia. But it's just sometimes, you know, Rob, you know, it's hard to explain why Washington does things a certain way. This is one of those bizarre moments where you would have thought that, hey, there's a peace deal, they should be happy. If their intention was to bring peace, you know, at least there's peace now. You know, I would have thought they would be like, well, how can we support this peace deal? How can we be part of the, reconstruction of Ethiopia? How do we help you redevelop, you know, bring the displaced people back? How do we feed the people that have gone hungry because of the war? No, but instead we're working on a sanction. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. I would imagine it's some kind of a political power play to intimidate Ethiopia somehow.
Well, yeah, that's certainly how it appears. It certainly is an unfriendly act. Well, look, in the time remaining, can you talk a little bit to our listeners? One of the reasons for this program is that there is a large community from the Horn of Africa living here in Colorado, Ethiopians, Eritreans, Somalis, South Sudanese, you name it, Djiboutians, they're all here. Can you tell us about the Ethiopian community here in the Denver, Aurora area? It's such a dynamic community. It's come alive over these past decades.
Yeah, Colorado is a beautiful place, a beautiful, welcoming place. Like you said, there's a large African community here. Our food, Ethiopian food, for example, is now part of the culinary scene in Denver. There's over 22 Ethiopian restaurants, very popular. And we're not a new immigrant group. We've been in Colorado since the mid-70s, by the way. So we're actually, 50 years, going on to 50 years. So we're on the second and third generation. This is a community that generators. This is our entrepreneurial community with lots of businesses that have been opened. And just really been a positive contributors to society culturally and economically, particularly in the Denver and Aurora area, but really statewide. That's why we have our annual Taste of Ethiopia Festival you know, 10, 15,000 people, Americans, come to it. It's not just Africans that come to it, really enjoy the cultural shows and the food and everything. But I'll tell you, you know, East Africa, especially Ethiopia, is a mountain region. We're a mountain people. So Colorado feels like home. We love Colorado, and this is home. But obviously, you know, our heart is also back home. That's why we're so deeply concerned about what happens to our extended families and the land we left behind, the old country.
Are we going to have a taste of Colorado this next summer? A taste of Colorado, excuse me. A taste of Ethiopia this coming summer?
Yeah. first weekend of August. So I would invite you both. I'm hungry. Because we'll...
We'll definitely do that.
Okay. Do you have any, in the, we only have a few minutes, I think, but do you have any final thoughts that you want to share that we didn't cover in this interview, Nebu?
No, I appreciate you. This is why public radio is so important. I would encourage the listeners to support our local media station here, because this is the kind of real story from real people that you don't get from the mainstream media, that often really clouds our judgment and, you know, really misinforms us about the world. So, you know, I'm happy about your coverage of Africa, and you always do it with dignity and fairness and equity. So I appreciate you both, and then I want to thank your listeners for giving us their time.
Well, we still have about 4 minutes or so. And Nebuhu, when you do the Taste of Ethiopia, there must be, with that many people in the area, there must be a lot of music as well at the Taste of Ethiopia. Do you bring in local musicians and so forth?
Yeah, we usually have multiple. And, starting from the Denver Municipal Band, they always come and perform the orchestra. And we usually have an Ethiopian band that flies from out of state. We have local performing groups that perform. And we also usually have either an African-American, like jazz band or group, or like a Caribbean, Jamaican reggae music. And once in a while, every year, we also feature one other African country. I think last year we did Zimbabwe. We had drummers from Zimbabwe there. So it's really a pan-African event. And we also embrace, this is held in Montbello. There's also a big community in the neighborhood. We also, you know, integrate some Latin culture, some music sometimes. So it's really a global event. And this is what we say, you know, humanity started from Ethiopia, so we think we're all Ethiopians, so we bring everybody to your culture, and we just have a good time and enjoy, and really the main point of it, and that's our culture, is bringing people together, and that's why we eat together, we eat on one plate, you know, it's a family and, you know, a village kind of culture, so that's what the festival is, and lots of
Well, it sounds like it's a big eclectic mix, which is what we do here at KGNU with our musical programs. There's so many diverse tastes and in the music that we play here, and along with, like you said, bringing news to the listeners that's not often heard in the mainstream media. So, as always, we're very pleased that you came back again this year to give your perspective on something that really had, I mean, I have to say, there was a day or two after the peace agreement was signed, and then it's just dropped off the map. There's really nothing about it, this peace agreement, which is huge.
Yep. You're right.
Right, let me just...
Yep.
Here we have a chance to work for peace. Our government isn't quite on board yet. So let's push them to do it, okay? all the other places in the world with their attentions. Here's a breakthrough for peace. And what it's said, it's time for us to give them a little goose, as they say, and get them pointed in the right direction.
Well, with that, gentlemen, we're going to have to call it an evening. I want to thank Nebihu Asfaw for joining us again for his perspective on the Ethiopian peace agreement and on the Ethiopian community here in Denver and Colorado. And I want to thank, as always, Rob Prince for another fine job of bringing what I was just saying, bringing Nebihu Asfaw from the Ethiopian community in joining us this evening, and bringing the KGNU listener information and analysis and a perspective not often heard in the corporate mainstream media, and giving that perspective to the KGNU listener. I look forward to our next program. We hope to have Ibrahim Kesrouni live from the Middle East as he visits the region. And if you would like to comment on this evening's program or any program you hear at KGNU, you can call the comment line at 303-447-9911. That's 303-447-9911. And thanks again for tuning in this evening to Hemispheres. I've been your host, Jim Nelson. Please tune in next week for another edition of Hemispheres. And it's coming up on time.